Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Okay, well, we're so glad that you guys could come. And I think our session might end up being a little bit like True Confessions, but we're all family and friends here. But if I was, you know, when asked to pick a topic about what's an important thing to address, what do you need to do or have in order to endure in ministry, to run that race with endurance and finish well, I would probably pick forgiveness and self-awareness. And the funniest part about that is I came to realize very late that I'm terrible at both of them. I actually thought I was good, and I'm not. And so this is my story of how I struggled with these things when I didn't even know it. But my story goes way back to when I was 13 and I met my future husband. And I decided at that point that I was going to marry him. He didn't know it. And I didn't tell him. But for the next 8 years, we dated off and on. And because I was so hooked on him and he was so 15, 16, 17, I ended up getting my heart broken dozens of times. But he was the first guy I ever kissed, and I was just stuck. We had this rocky dating relationship until one day he said, I think it's time for us to get committed and talk about our relationship. And so we got married. But the same month that we got engaged, he was hired here as the college pastor. And so, like most husbands, probably like many of your husbands, he was so passionate about his calling and the church. And he loved the church that so much. Sometimes I felt like he loved the church more than he loved me. And the fact that we had 4 children in the first 5-6 years of marriage made it a little bit more challenging. And at the same time, the church went through this crazy roller coaster where we went through 4 senior pastors in the first 5 years. So it was a great education, but it was not something I'd ever recommend for a newlywed. because he was fighting to keep church doors open. He was fighting for his life, and I became just one more person that was really just asking for his attention. He never could remember our anniversary or Valentine's Day, and he never could figure out what flowers I liked, or what kind, if I liked coffee or tea, and all these things I craved from him. And so I ended up developing a lot of resentment and hurt. And I held him responsible for all of my pain. I was miserably shy and insecure and very lonely and isolated. And I kept looking to him to be the answer to my pain. And it took me a long time to realize that he could not heal me and he could not make me happy. And really, it was only the Lord who could, but only when I was ready to let him. A friend helped me see that in a bizarre way, we hold on to our wounds and they become like friends. They get so familiar that they're almost comforting and we don't want to let them go. And as I look back, I think they became my excuse not to, not to open up my heart and to not be wholehearted because it was too painful. But I soon realized that there is no meaningful relationships without being willing to trust and open up your heart. I've realized that, as 1 Corinthians 13 says, love cannot be a record keeper. And I was a tremendous record keeper. I cataloged all of the hurts that I had in my life. But I'm such a slow learner, because years later, many years later, I went through this. I had this year where just a bunch of things happened at one time. My mom died. My best friend, the friend that I shared absolutely everything with, left the church. And she said her husband was just so frustrated. The church had grown so big, and the parking was a problem, and it took 20 minutes to get out the door. And so they left the church. And then this ministry, I used to be the local and global outreach pastor, and this ministry that I had just been so passionate about and loved went sideways on me. The leadership and I disagreed about what should be done, how things should be done, and it became this big, ugly email campaign, and I felt so betrayed and so hurt that I basically withdrew. I came to church probably 5 times that year, and I sat in the back in the dark and cried my way through the service. But, you know, we're pastor's wives, so I learned how to have a pretty good facade, and I was so good at faking it that I almost forgot how to be real. It's a danger with people in ministry, because we have to go on, and people's expectations of us are so prevalent, and we think we have to always live up to that we can't even mourn our own losses and go through our own struggles. But the funny thing is, I thought I was managing it pretty well, because I just was plowing ahead with life. But after a while, I realized that I really had lost all my joy and all my passion, because you cannot suppress the sadnesses and the losses and the pain without also suppressing the joy and the hope and the passion. But slowly, I began to heal, and I realized something very important. While most of the time I could forgive, I still held on to my wounds. And they really were my excuse not to trust people. But then I had this guy in Africa come, and a friend of mine. And he did this word from the Lord. I don't know if you guys have had this done or you do this, but I've never had it done. But it was a man I trusted, and he was a godly guy. And he came to me and he said, "Lori, I have a word from the Lord. Do you want to receive it?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "It's just really a picture. It's a picture of a well that has been, water used to flow, but then rocks and stones and sand have gradually accumulated and the water stopped flowing. But the Lord wants you to know the water is going to flow again." And I knew exactly what he meant. The verse came to mind, the Proverbs verse that I think I've known all my life. Guard your heart above all else, for it is the wellspring of life. And in a flippant way, I think I had thought that meant protect yourself from people who will hurt you. And I realized that I had missed the whole point. It was, don't let your heart be filled up with resentment and bitterness and all your wounds, because that is the source of life, and there will be a place where you can't even, there will be no water flowing. If you've ever been to Haiti, there's one of their big issues is water, fresh water. And so years ago, we were going down there to build all these wells, and you drive along, and you see every mile is a well. And you go, why are we building more wells when there's so many wells here? And the reality is that I did not understand is wells have to be maintained, that you have to check the equipment, and the pressure is critical to bring up the water. And I thought I hadn't been managing the pressure in my life, and I had stopped flowing, and I was no good to anybody. I could not refresh or bring healing or life out of a dry, empty well. I realized that when somebody hurts us, you know, or wounds us, it might be their sin, but when you hang on to it, it becomes our sin. and it becomes our excuse not to be obedient or courageous or bold. Hebrews 12:1 has been one of my favorite verses for the last few years. Therefore, since we have such a great cloud of witnesses, let us run with endurance. No, it's let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, so that we can run with endurance the race set marked out for us, and fixing our eyes on Jesus. Every little thing that I tried to carry and hold on to was weighing me down, and I would not have survived, and I would not have finished the race if I couldn't learn how to let go of those things. This other verse God gave me a few years ago, it says, God says, rebuild the road, clear away the rocks, and so that my people can return from captivity. I restore the crushed spirit of the humble and revive the courage of those with repentant hearts. It was showing me that the jail I had created in my own life was a captivity, and that I had bought into it, and his design was to free me. But I first had to forgive, and I then had to ask for forgiveness, because looking back, I realized that all of these points where I was so wounded, I had a part in it too. I didn't respond every time with pure godliness, and it was such freedom to receive forgiveness and to give forgiveness. I know that that all of you here came because you wanted to serve the Lord with your whole heart and your whole life. And I think we've all seen people later in their life in ministry where they seem to just lose their fire and their passion. And you think, how pitiful is that? How sad is that, that they would not finish well? But you don't get there overnight. It didn't just happen. They didn't choose to do that. It creeps in on you as you carry each little disappointment or wound. That is my story of God releasing me and helping me learn how to not carry the load, not to be hindered by all these little things that happened. My biggest confession is the first pastor's conference I went to. I was at a table with women who are much older than me. I was 25. And they shared horrendous, sad stories. And I didn't say anything, thank God. But in my mind, I'm going, what did you do wrong? You know, I think if you're just really straightforward with people about who you are, you don't try to pretend to be something else, you don't pretend to be perfect, those things couldn't possibly happen to you. And looking back, every single thing that they cried about, I've experienced in my life. And I don't know how I could avoid them. They just are part of life. So the good news is, he is more than sufficient. And when I look at all the pain of being a pastor's wife, I think I just need to spend more time looking at the cross, because he was betrayed, he was spit on, he was rejected, and he endured unimaginable pain for us. What is this in light of that? And that is my prayer.
I have to go after Lori. Not fun. So my husband is the pastor of Mariners Huntington Beach. So we launched just over 3 years ago. And I'm really sorry this morning. I have two little ones at home too. And my husband came early to print off my talk, but he couldn't. So I'm reading off of a phone, which is kind of small. Okay. So I was raised in a Catholic home, but certainly didn't have like a substantial faith or anything. I was a rather wild child. I lived in Spain. I just kind of had a broken family, so I kind of turned to partying for my identity and boys, and I was pretty lost, actually. So it was pretty painful, like, number of years. And then I started following Jesus and met my husband. I mean, long story short, like, fell in love with Jesus, fell in love with my husband, we got married. And at the time, my husband wasn't in interested in being in ministry as dad of a pastor. We just didn't anticipate, I didn't anticipate being a pastor's wife, and I didn't anticipate him going into ministry. My view of like a pastor's wife was boring, kind of, back of the church. So my father-in-law's pastor, my mother-in-law's pastor's wife, she's the one that's at the back of the church. She looks perfect. She shakes everyone's hand. She's at every single event, and she's just kind of difficult for me sometimes. We're growing. They know we're growing. So anyway, not my favorite. Like, could not fathom myself in that role. And then the Hillary that used to party was like repulsed by pastor's wife, I think. You know, like just wouldn't know how to like interact. And then as I became, you know, a little bit more longer in my faith, I think I viewed them as intimidating and they would know all the answers. And so not my mother-in-law, but like just women in general that are pastor's wives, I wouldn't know how to fit in with them. I wouldn't know all the answers. But 4 years into my husband and I's marriage, he was called into ministry, and it was on volleyball court. It wasn't something that he sought out. He just was asked to apply for a lead pastor position at Mariner. So it wasn't something that we necessarily sought out. However, it was very Spirit-led, and as he kept kind of walking through the interview process, it became very clear to both of us that this was God calling my husband into this role. And it was very scary for me, because of my background. However, my husband just assured me that all I had to do was be myself, love people. That's my gifting. I love to be with people and to connect, and I'd be fine. And so I thought it was great. I just got to kind of like move into that role, and it was so wonderful. And it, most importantly, I loved my husband in this role. It was like, holy cow, our first 4 years of marriage, we just struggled in all of his roles that he tried to put on, and this one fit, and he was the happiest man I'd ever seen. And so for me, I wanted to do anything I could to make this work and be sustainable for him. So, which, as you could imagine, fear started to creep in. I was afraid that it would end, that somehow we would run out of money, we wouldn't be able to keep any staff, we wouldn't grow, we wouldn't reach the lost people that I identified with and was passionate about seeing at our church. I was afraid how the world would view me as a pastor's wife. As we added services, which is terrifying, because you have like a full service and then you try, you're like, we're going to double this, who's going to come, who's going to get me seats? It is so scary. But they got filled. I began to try and control. I tried to control how the money was spent. I offered to make patio decor. One time I made 800 cookies, sugar cookies, but from scratch, frosted, sprinkled, and delivered. Like, I was absolutely crazy. I was on the patio before and after every service, three of them. Now we're at four. I don't do it anymore. Trying to connect with people and make sure they felt welcomed and loved, I thought I could personally keep people there. And if I didn't talk with them and meet them, they might not feel loved, or they might get the wrong impression, and only I could give the impression that, you know, they needed, right? I also feared that volunteers would quit if they didn't see me working longer and harder than them, and how could I expect them to help if I wasn't there helping? It was pretty miserable. At the time, I had a 10-month-old. I was working early mornings teaching Pilates, and all my spare time and naps and stuff went to helping the church. And my hubby, the funny thing, didn't ask me to do any of this. He actually really didn't want me to do any of it. And instead of me being more loving and present, I actually became pretty sassy. And like, instead of me being on the patio, like, joyfully hanging my bunting banners, I was like, where's your helping me my bunting banners? I was super stressed. And I was running around trying to get things done instead of just loving people, which is what my husband really wanted me to do. I was full of anxiety and striving. Around the same time, Lori saw fit to gather all the lead pastors' wives together, which is us four, to go through a study together, which honestly scared the heck out of me. I didn't know them very well, and I feared that they wouldn't think I was a good enough pastor's wife. I was intimidated by the other ladies. However, that wasn't what happened. I felt loved, known, and encouraged. It was out of one of the pastor's wives' meeting that Lori just flat out told me to stop. She said, "You will never stop worrying about how the money is spent." She said she still worries at this size of a church how the money is spent. And I was like, okay, I can relax a little bit. You simply can't do it all. She also assured me that I was doing a great job and my husband was doing great as well. God spoke through Lori and gave me a peace about letting go of all the self-inflicted stress over my overinflated role that I tried to fit myself into. I had to learn that God was in control. The reality is, even though I can do all those things, I'm a really good baker, they aren't the best things for me to do. There are other things that God can call. There are other people that God can call. And by me focusing on what's most important to me, I'm opening up more places for people to serve. I'm also freed up to love people better. Instead of being busy and stressed, I'm able to be loving and present. I'm also able to take care of my family better. And you know what? We didn't go broke. People still come every Sunday. Nobody made 700 cookies, but probably don't want them to do that anyway. Not one pastor's wife can grow a church. Actually, no one person can. Only God can do that. I currently am enjoying my new identity, encouraging staff and volunteers, bringing wisdom to my husband's messages. Being a mom and a wife, I bring life, energy, and joy to the patio. I'm at peace with and content in the role that God has called me to. The very best thing I could do for the church was love my husband, love myself, and take care of my family. There is no pastor's wife mold that we have to try and fit ourselves into. Our job is to simply be the unique person that God designed us to be and support the effort that God is doing in our communities. I'm grateful that I have this special group of women who breathe life into me. They know the stress our husbands manage. They can empathize and offer tremendous wisdom. Countless times God has spoken through each and every one of them. Sorry, I'm getting misty, I can't read. And help guide, mold, and shape me to be the best version of me. We laugh together, we pray together, we point each other towards Jesus. Sometimes we scream, often we cry. This group of ladies has been one of the greatest gifts God has ever given me. We are all different in our roles, at each other's campuses, look uniquely different. My prayer for you today is that you find the same unique community to walk through this life with, because it's hard. But they get me. They could have wrote this for me. They're wonderful. And I have the privilege of introducing you to Amanda. She is one of my very favorite people. I always say I want like a little earpiece with her in there telling me how to respond to weird stuff. She's like the sweetest, cutest.
You think it's me?
No, I think she's funny. I just think she's wonderful. I just adore her. And so this is one of my very favorite people.
Because I get kind of sappy. As Lori was sharing with us about what she wanted to talk to you guys about and her heart for pastors' wives and people serving, whose husband's first commitment is to ministry. She talked about the well and how we don't want anything to block that well so that the river can flow. And so part of my story, a stone that I, helped me identify. It's a stone that I pick up and I drop. I put it back in the well and I pick it back up. I drop it. I put it back in the well. And it has just been a continuing stone in my story, and it's still today. And that's my issue of trust with God. This morning I actually woke up and just the verse, the very famous, one of the top 10 verses in the Bible, Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you. And I was thinking how much I wrestle with that verse. That as soon as God gives me that verse for whatever I'm going through, the very first thing that I say is, oh yeah, God, you know the plans I have? Because they're kind of awesome. Mm-hmm. I disregard maybe the plans that God has for me. My husband is the lead pastor at the Mission Viejo campus for Mariners. But Irvine is our home. It's our home church. We grew up in ministry here. We my husband came here as the youth pastor. So we were here for over 13 years in that role. And almost two Christmases ago, Kenton said to Jeff, while doing the Christmas Eve services with him, "Hey, I'm going to change your life." And Jeff was like, okay. Like, Kenton, you know, he's like a bull in a china shop. He just was like, you don't know what he's going to say. Like, I'm going to give you a new power. I'm going to... He said, "I want you to pray about being the lead pastor over at the Mission Viejo campus." I'm like, what? That's crazy. And then in the same moment, I knew this is exactly what we should do. I had no hesitation. It was with great joy that we said, and it was amazing. It was an amazing journey to watch Jeff serve in such a different way than youth ministry, the way he got to use his gifts and talents. It really strengthened our marriage. It really strengthened our family. It was really fun. Ministry was super fun and vibrant again for our family. Where my issue of trust came in was Mission Viejo. I don't know if a lot of you know, it is 20 minutes away from Irvine. It is not far. But in Irvine, I had my babies. I lived in my dream neighborhood. I had a community right at my fingertips. I was doing great ministry that God had put in my lap at my kids' school. And I thought, on paper, this is amazing. I can stay here, and Jeff, we can be the pastor at Mission Viejo. Because I had lived in Mission Viejo before. I grew up in Mission Viejo. And it was a scary, dangerous place for me. And since I'm still going through this, this isn't something that I have totally let go of completely. I'm going to my notes. When I remember the bulk of my childhood and who I was, my memories are painful and sad, scary, full of shame, and I remember an unlovable child who was never alone, but painfully alone all the time. During those 10 years living in Mission Viejo was the worst time in my family, with my mom specifically, a lot of verbal abuse, physical abuse, fighting, financial instability. Every stop sign when I drive through my city now is a terrible memory of a slap to the face. Every store that I go into, they're still the same. I walk into straight into the past. The feelings rush back and I cringe with embarrassment and fear. Every park that I take my children to today reminds me of a bad decision I made in high school with boys or drugs. Why in the world would God desire for me to relive this tragic season of my life? Why of all places would I come back to Mission Viejo, literally 1/2 mile from where everything happened? So this story isn't of complete restoration or healing. It's restoration and process. Healing happens on a daily basis for me. I know healing. I trust God with healing in my past. I've been healed with the relationship with my mom. I've struggled with the fear of being alone, where it was paralyzing and terrifying. And Jesus gave me the power of his name and renewed strength from him, and that was gone. I've had healing in the last year that Jesus took away what doctors was certain was cancer. I've had pain for 6 months, and God told me, "You will not believe my healing for you." And I don't, and I didn't. So I know that God can heal me. I know that God is at work. But there's still this battle that I hang on to with trust for him. I'm clearly on a path for healing and restoration. I know that God, and I have no doubt that God is at work. I don't have warm fuzzies yet now that we moved to Mission Viejo. So Jeff got the job in Mission Viejo almost like 2.5 years ago, and we just moved. It's taken me almost two complete years. We just moved in June. So it's taken me that long to really take the jump and to surrender. I still don't have that warm fuzzy about living back in Mission Viejo, but as I run, I'm a runner, so I run out my stress. So literally as I'm running through the city, God is creating new paths and a new life for me with my family, and God speaks and I can hear him, and he's graciously reminding me of what is good. And I'm trying to let go of that shameful, unlovable teenager that I still wrap so much of my identity up in her. But I'm getting new eyes. I've seen God's hand in all of these details of the move, in every word that he promised for me to take these steps to move. everything has happened just like he said it did and would. I hate, though, that I still walk alongside of God timidly and doubtful. He has proved himself over and over again trustworthy and good. And maybe this restoration and healing story will get me to the place someday of running with God just in wild abandon. But my eyes right now are still, I feel like I'm just closing them really tight and I just am holding my breath and I just jumped off a cliff. But I'm finding that there is freedom in just the obedience of going because he said to go. And I know, do I know the peace will come later? He said it. So I'm still walking through this healing and holding on. And I know there will be joy in this complete healing in this season of my life. But so trust is my stone. And I do have these great women to walk through and point it out to me. Holiday is going to come up and share her journey of being a pastor's wife. And it's her birthday today, so that's kind of fun. Now she's a year older than me, and I can tease her about that. Thanks for letting me share. Hi, guys. I'm going to go fast because I really want to get questions from you. No, it's perfect. I love it. Good from you, too. But I wanted to start off. I'm a pastor's kid, pastor's niece. I'm a pastor's, I'm a granddaughter of a pastor, and my husband's a pastor. So I've gotten to play every role in the pastor, as a pastor's kid, niece, granddaughter, whatever. I know the church, and I know this church really well. This is the church I grew up in. It's not only like where my story is, it's my fingerprints are on in every building, my muddy shoes tracking mud through the old campus, and this campus has touched every room. And I've lived and cried and been in every life stage in this church. And I've seen the best and the worst in the church. Because you'll get to hear a little bit of my story, but the church has been a blessing, and it's also been very hard. Some of the best memories and some of my worst memories have been made here. God has taught me amazing things. In the past 10 years, I'm just going to share 3 points. He's taught me what true accountability is. He taught me about the difference between luggage and baggage. And he also taught me that my testimony is my ministry. And when he heals, and he does healing in me, and helps me heal others, it is revenge on the evil one. And it is my testimony that gives me authority to seek revenge on the enemy. The Lord has been wanting to do upgrades in my life for many years, and these upgrades have been painful and beautiful. As a pastor's kid, my life was very full. We lived for the church, and my best childhood memories were made in the church. When I was 12, my dad compromised his marriage. He had an affair, and it shattered our world. Being a pastor's kid, when your dad has an affair, he doesn't get to go back to work. And so not only does it affect my parents' marriage and the church, it affects us economically, spiritually, and it shattered all of those around us. Everything that we weren't anymore. My dad got a job. He started selling newspapers and paving roads. And I remember seeing my dad drive up in one of these, like, cars. He had delivered papers. And I just remember thinking, what happened? And it really started changing my view of God. And it really changed the way that I saw God. And I remember when it was announced at church, I remember sitting in this corner, like staring out the window. I can remember the window, and I can remember how I felt. And I just remember everybody kind of looking at me, I thought they were. And I just remember being so embarrassed. And I remember just thinking, Lord, how, I was eighth grade, you know, so like how awkward of a season anyways. But it was awkward enough, and at the age of just kind of trying to figure out who I was. And I just saw my dad crying and embarrassed. And I don't know if it was conscious, but it was the day that I grew up. I no longer had my innocence, but I was aware of what was going on. And I realized I kind of kicked into gear. I was like, okay, God, I'm not sure what just happened. I'm not sure who you are. Not sure, again, if it was conscious or unconscious, but I just literally went to, I'm going to gear up here. And I went to fear, anxiety, and perfectionism. It became my best friend. Like Lori was saying, it was something that worked for me at the time. I was the first grandbaby of a lot of kids. And I actually had to live at my grandma's house. And she was a pastor's wife, but like in the pastor's wife, the pastor's wife, old school pastor's wife, perfectionist. So I learned some great tools on perfectionism from her. I knew that I must perform, and I did. I ran as fast as I could. Literally and spiritually, because it paid for my college, and I knew I had to pay for my college. But God radically offered something to me. When I was a sophomore, I went to UCI, so I didn't really go far. And my uncle offered and said, hey, why don't you work as an intern at our church? We're offering this internship program in youth ministry. And it radically changed my life. I remember when I was 19, one of the things that we have to do being on staff is we have to kind of go through a spiritual growth journey. Actually, we went through it. It's called Story. And it basically just looks at the baggage in your life and kind of helps you dig through it. And so I was 19, and I remember kind of being faced with my anxiety. I realized that I had a fear of God, that I didn't see him as freeing and loving. But I saw him as somebody I had to perform for. So he began to set me free. He started a spiritual growth journey in my life, and I remember he started to teach me about what luggage and baggage was. And he actually helped me realize that if I was to forgive my dad and forgive what happened, that I actually had to understand that. And I actually just realized this. I was hearing a speaker talk about this, and it really helped clarify things for me. Luggage, like baggage, you know when you hear people say, oh, she's got a lot of baggage. I think what I realize is I used to believe that about my dad, and I used to believe that about myself. And I think what God was reminding me says, Holiday, I died on the cross for your baggage. You don't have baggage. You have some luggage that I want you to unpack, and I'm going to give you some new luggage each day that you get to unpack. But if you don't unpack it, you don't get to enjoy what I have to offer. It's like if I was to send you to Maui, and you took your luggage with you, and it was full of, like, polar iceware. I'd be so bummed. You're, like, at Maui, and you've got, like, big jackets and coats. You wouldn't be able to be free. So he's like, I want you to, like, be able to run through the beach with the right clothes. And so I think what it made me realize is sometimes we just don't know how or have the tools to go through our luggage. And so it helped me forgive my dad, because I just realized he just didn't have the tools. He just doesn't have the tools to go through that luggage. And so what helped me is I realized I need to understand how to go through that. So this journey began my journey of growth. I married a pastor. That was the next step to my growth. And I begged God not to give me a husband as a pastor. He did. And I also said, don't make me work here with my husband. That would be way too hard. A lot of like what Amanda said, I just cannot imagine having to do that. But he really wanted to set me free. And it was so fun because he also, I think, reminded me that not only am I right in the place of my pain station, he put me right in the epicenter of it. He hand-delivered me into staring at it and being confronted with it every day. And he said, through four incidents that happened in my life, that he was going to free me of anxiety and perfectionism. He said, because Orange County needs to be free of anxiety and perfectionism. And you're the only one, this moment, you're supposed to be here. And so it was a battle. It's been a battle. And 8 years ago, four things happened. One is my brother was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. One of my best friends died in a tragic accident. And I witnessed a miracle and got to travel to Haiti. Those four things got literally radically changed my life forever. God proved that he would sustain me, even if my brother died. He showed up because the girl who passed away, her sister and I got to walk through burying her sister. And he showed me through her that God would sustain me if my brother was to die. But he also did this amazing miracle in front of my face. I saw, like, I witnessed a woman go through a tragic accident and live. And God said, I can also do miracles.
And so he just started to root out anxiety in my life. And he started to show me what my baggage was, and that turned it into, gave me the tools to actually dig through my luggage. So he, as he began to set me free, showed me how God wanted to use my story, and that he actually wanted me here at this church. And the crazy thing is, you know, I used to not, it would be hard for me to share my story because my dad is local. Lori's my aunt, so she knows my story. My uncle is the senior pastor of this church. And so for me, it was always like, how do I do that? How do I do dad's story? What do I do? And God was so great showing me that actually in this broken world of Orange County, the fear and the perfectionism, and the broken relationships of 50% of divorce, and just so you know, in Orange County, we're at 73% divorce rate, we're the highest in the nation. He said, in that brokenness, like, holiday, wouldn't it be so beautiful to be able to show and see that families can work together and live, and that through kind of this imperfection, that I can actually do some mighty work. People are desperate to be set free. And God does the supernatural. In the Facebook and the social media generation, people are desperate for imperfection, realness, real relationships, and being set free. And that is why I think our meeting together is so important, is because one of the other things, like I said, that he showed me is what true accountability is. He showed me that accountability isn't pointing at somebody and trying to get them to understand, like call them on their stuff. It's actually to call them to who they are. And I think that is what has been so beautiful in our relationship, is we don't just try to like look at each other and go, wait a minute, what you doing? Where are you at? But literally like, that's not who you are. You don't want to be full and running crazy and making cookies, right, Hillary? And Holiday, you don't want to be anxious. You're getting a little bit anxious. And they point at me not like with a accountability finger, but with a, like a build-up finger of like, that's not who you are. You're playing this bit part in your story. You're the main like character. What are you doing right now? You're about to fall into bitterness. That's not who you are. I have files on these sisters, like literally that I pull up and go, wait a minute. I know this is who you are, Amanda. I know this is who you are. That's not who you are. That's not who you're called to be. Because as pastor's wife, literally every day you're sideswiped by somebody making a comment, and we have to like bring together and go, wait, I know who you are. Don't get discouraged. Don't get bitter. Don't lose sight. So that is one thing that we help, and it really helps us kind of train our minds in the right way, and calling each other up instead of, you know, calling into like pointing our fingers. The last thing is that I think whenever we're given a prophecy, like Gloria was saying, it's something to unpack. It's just new luggage to unpack. It's not baggage that is going to weigh us down, but it's just luggage to unpack. I think as I was thinking about us and like how we want to kind of engage you guys in conversation, I was thinking about, you know, God is like, he's at this like ticket counter, and he's like, guys, I got your tickets. I got your tickets. And like, I'm like sitting there in like the, you know, luggage thing. I'm like, okay, I'm coming. And then like, we have a choice to like grab our luggage and go with him, or we can just hold on to the bag and just like keep rotating like around the little rug. Oh, I'm coming, Jesus. Okay, one thing inside the little baggage thing. I'll be right there. And it's like, he's like going, no, I want you to be set free. Just take that baggage and unload it and just see it as luggage. So that's my story. I know that we wanted to open up to questions, and so we have just a bit of time for questions. Is there anything else that you guys want to share, or topics, yeah, that you wanted to just run through? That's our light there.